Off the Ball, GAA.
And even in the start of the first half, I was actually close enough to him when the game was going on and things weren't going well for Roscommon, and he was still the same. Like, you wouldn't even know if they're winning or losing. That's kind of the way he is, and he kind of projects that to the dressing room as well.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
You ain't shit!
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
Well, fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof at the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have, and, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not lies. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jimmy McGuinness in his life.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number, folks, for your contributions. Celtic won, Hearts won in Scotland at half time at Parkhead in the title decider. Good enough for Hearts right now, but Celtic have just got a goal from a penalty just before the break, so could go either way. This one, a simple theme today, because between now and about 2:35, 2:40, we're going to review the sporting week, talk about the topics on many people's minds. Lots going on, folks. Delighted to have in studio the Irish Daily Mail sports editor, Orla McElroy, and the Star columnist and two-time sports writer of the year, Roy Curtis. Orla and Roy, are very welcome to the show.
Cheers, Goody.
Thank you, John. I was just thinking on the way in as the rain spat down. This Saturday last year, a gang of us went down to Dublin and Galway in Salt Hill, and it was the hottest day of the summer. It was 80 degrees. This time last year, about half one, I was drinking about my third pint in Taffs. We were setting out on the road up to Salt Hill, and I said, life can't get any better.
And now look at you, here in the studio of a radio studio.
Eurovision Day. What's another year,
the
John?
Sterile studio of a radio.
It did get better, JD. Look at him. Where else would he rather be?
Yeah, also interesting that you're talking Fahrenheit now.
Yeah, well, I've always been an American. It's PGA Championship week.
The Football and Hurling Championship. So, what's been more exciting so far? I'm thinking it's probably a draw. The Hurling Championship for me has been very exciting because of the jeopardy of it at this stage of the competition. It's more jeopardy than the football right now. I mean, I thought Cork and Limerick had a real box office vibe about it, real intensity. And Tipperary Clare tonight's got everything on it. And then the Football Championship has been as exciting because of the rules and the fact that Monaghan are dead and buried against Derry, for example, the Jack McCarron moment, the Rory Beggan moment. These are just made for social media and clips and everything. So how are you feeling? What's your state of the nation feel about hurling and football? Because we are in the thick of the championships.
Well, I have to say, I was thinking about this over the last day or two. And in America at the moment, the Smithsonian are looking for 250 exhibits to represent America's 250 years. And I was thinking, if I was to pick two exhibits to represent an Irish summer, I had both of them this week. The scenes when Roscommon won their Connacht Championship last week, the emotions it summons, it actually alters people's sense of self. It gives them something, a sense of identity in a world that's mad. There's a blanket of primrose after Roscommon have come back from 6 points down. Galway heavyweights have thrown the very best of themselves. Damien Comer and Shane Walsh have been incredible. And yet Roscommon came back oozing adventure and fearlessness, playing at pace. And it brings a rush of blood. I thought Dara Heenahan's performance was the performance of the summer. I mean, his legs move like a hummingbird's wings, 50, 100 beats a second. And you look at this and you look at how the rules have changed Gaelic football. As you say, the Jack McCarron point, the shocks we've had. So that would be my first one. And then the Clare Tipperary under 20 hurling match and that penalty shootout. Oh my God. Mark Sheedy saves. I mean, when it makes ESPN sporting moment of the day. And you realise here we are in this small country in the middle of summer, and we have these games and this association in a homogenised world that can lift people, that can change their life for these magical days, moments that will live with you forever. I was looking at old men crying in Hyde Park last week. I was looking at kids full of wonder. They're seduced for the next generation. And we talk about the provincial championships and whether they matter or whether they don't. Westmeath could do something extraordinary tomorrow. Armagh haven't won a provincial title for 2008. Monaghan have only a couple. These are magical moments and they touch me at the heart, I must say.
That's some ode to the championship, isn't it? But you know what? It's true. And it's a lovely part of what we have about us. We did a piece a few weeks back where we were looking at like the best championship venues. And I was going looking for pictures. So I was going back looking through pictures of Ulster final days in Clonus and games down at the Hyde. And, you know, all the stadiums have something going for them. Something unique, you know, you look at the Hyde and it's the graveyard, you know, things like that. The joy of those is looking at the pictures of the fans streaming up to Clonus. You know, there's great pictures of, you see people in the crowd having their, you know, whether it's a flask of tea and a ham sandwich or, you know, can of orange or whatever it is, lads walking up with pints or 99s or whatever. It's just something so wonderful, and it's something that it's joyful to be part of during the summer.
You're doing this tonight. You're going to the Kilkenny Kildare.
Yeah, I am, because I want to get involved. You know, I want to get involved and I want to go and be part of, like, I'm not a hurling. I was never steeped in hurling. I'm not a hurling
snob,
loyalist, royalist, whatever you want to call it. But I love hurling. And I love going to a good hurling match. And I'll go to any hurling match. And I can't, you know, I'm not going to get down to a Munster hurling game. So Kildare are playing Liam McCarthy and they're playing Kilkenny in Nolan Park. Like, where else would you rather be? Like, I'm going, leaving here, heading to collect the young fella, and we're going to go down and watch that. And it's just, there's nothing like a championship day out. And better again when it is your county, but it doesn't have to be. I've gone to games, you know, where the Leinster hurling final, I went to Kilkenny Galway one a couple of years back. It turned out to be an absolute cracker of a game, just to enjoy the day, enjoy the occasion. And you can do that. And it's great to get out there and just enjoy being part of what is, as Roy says, absolutely unique around the world. You know, there's nothing like it.
It does evoke memories, isn't it? I know you've said before, Roy, about going to the Dubs in the 70s. I remember going to even Leinster matches in the 80s with my dad, and as a neutral, because my dad was from Clare, where the Wexford fans, they always kind of reminded me of Newcastle football fans. They had that, just that passion, the Wexford hurling supporters, and they'd usually lose. And then even going down to the Clare Limerick game in 1995, 10 punts for a ticket, you'd be literally bringing the sandwiches in the Club Orange and having a flask of tea in the sweltering, baking Liberty Square, is it, in Thurles?
Yeah, I was a GA correspondent from a very young age and would have travelled to all the venues around the country. But it's when I stopped covering matches that you could actually go and appreciate that the 70 minutes may be the centrepiece, but it's the stuff around it that really makes it special. The stuff Orla outlined, that evocative sense of place. And almost every year you have a county that gets on a run and there's a famine. And it's very easy as a neutral to attach yourself to those stories, because they're stories of yearning, they're stories of joy, they're stories of people trying to overcome odds. You hear the historic comparisons, and it's like an ATM from which you can withdraw this euphoria when teams are going well for you. I mentioned Roscommon. When Westmeath beat Meath, I think only the second time they've beaten Meath in the championship earlier this year. In Aucrim, Wicklow pushed Dublin right to the brink. Down, who are now in the Tailteann Cup, beat Donegal, who are the second favourites for the All-Ireland. You mentioned Jeopardy. I mean, I'm a big Dublin fan. During the Dublin years of dominance, perhaps we didn't have that Jeopardy. A combination of the rule changes in football and the fact that Kerry are favourites, they lost the league final by 20 points. Donegal are second favourites, they were beaten by a team that's now in the Tailteann Cup. Meath were many people's dark horse, they were beaten by Westmeath. Galway and Mayo, the two superpowers of Connacht, if you like, both humbled by Roscommon playing splendidly. So we're having result after result that's against the odds. In the hurling, look, I just think it's the most beautiful expression of Irishness I know, when you see a good hurling game. And I don't say that as a hurling snob. I didn't play hurling. I say it as someone who's just falling in love with what I think is artistically magnificent. I know. There's an awful lot of controversy about GA Plus. I mean, I just find it remarkable. Donal O'Cusack and John Milan have been talking about it. There's such a limited window that there's no hurling championship game on terrestrial TV this weekend. Clare play Tipperary tonight, the last two All-Ireland champions. A game full of jeopardy. The losers in big, big trouble, and it's hidden away. Kilkenny under more pressure than they've been under since the pre-Cody era, possibly not getting out of Leinster. Game is invisible to us. I mean,
can you understand it?
No. Okay.
Can you understand it?
I do, right? I do to a degree. And up till this year, I would have been more of an advocate for GAA Plus and GAA Go, and, you know, saying that it's providing a service. It's putting on games that weren't going to be seen elsewhere. It's not like there was games missing off TV that would have been shown. That's changed this year. And now we are missing out on games. And get, like, as Roy says, you know, that Tip Clare game. Like,
how does it make sense for me? Look, we're not trying to get into rant territory here, because I just think, you know, I think a rethink is required here. How can, and Munster, I sat down because I've got Clare leanings, not from Clare, I've got Clare leanings. I sat down and watched an absolutely fantastic match between Clare and Tipperary under 20s, went to extra time, went to penalties. As you said, Roy, reached the ESPN, over 100,000 people watched it on all the TGCAR platforms. How can that be on free-to-air terrestrial television and then a game at senior level with, the, as you said, the last two All-Ireland champions playing this evening, which has everything on it? Like, I'm going to go home this evening. Thankfully, we don't have commentary of the game on Off the Ball and News Talk here. I'm going to listen to Clare FM this evening. I will not pay the money for GAA Plus. For the diaspora, it is a wonderful idea to have GAA Plus. But there's a couple of things here. I think there's three reasons the GAA would set up a streaming service. For the diaspora, brilliant, ethical, inclusive, fantastic stuff for anybody abroad. Secondly, because RT are the only game in town. And because they have other programs, there's a finite amount of matches they can show. Therefore, the GAA's got to provide an additional service. And thirdly, to bring in as much revenue as possible to the association that they can redistribute to support coaching, to support infrastructure, to support ultimately integration with the Camogie Ladies Associations. But on point B, how can TG Carr show the club championships, the ladies football championships,
the league,
juvenile games, and not show senior championship matches? So there is another game in town, and I don't know the ins and outs of it, but surely TG Carr would jump at the chance to show senior championship matches. And on point C, the GAA, the FAI be jealous of this. The GAA have done an incredible job in terms of generating revenue. In 2015, it was approximately 55 million that they generated. Last year, approximately 142 million in revenue that they generated. The split season has helped that, obviously, because you can have concerts in the summer. You can have Leeds against Manchester United. How much revenue is enough revenue? I know 83 cents in the euro goes back to the association, but how much revenue is enough revenue when volunteers that are giving their time from Tipperary or from Clare today or for Kerry and Donegal next week cannot see the best games in the championship that have everything on them at the times that matter on free-to-air television?
John, this is... I've worked for almost 40 years in journalism. I love the GAA. It lives in my heart. This is the greatest act of self-sabotage. An organisation that I believe is crippled by complacency in terms of how it's hiding its crown jewels in the back of the closet. There is a fight to get bodies to play games, whether it's rugby, whether it's soccer, whether it's Gaelic games. There's real world competition there. And without the next generation, the game is doomed. John Milan talked last week about how difficult it is to get people playing hurling in Waterford. Why? Because they don't see hurling. Yes, the games are available to pay, but the reality is, this is ultimately a look at the essence of the GAA. The GAA was formed to promote Gaelic games, Irish language, Irish culture, Irish games. It is based on a Corinthian idea of volunteerism. You cannot have that volunteerism and then ask those volunteers to pay, to watch, to sit in the front room. They can go to a match and pay. Yes, there are Sky Sports subscriptions for other sports, but they cover multiple sports. We're talking about an amateur organisation. I understand the redistribution of money, and the GAA do a phenomenal job of facilities. You mentioned the money there. How much is enough? Is the GAA a revenue-generating entity, or is it there to promote Gaelic games? It will argue it has to raise the revenue to promote the games. But when the most important feature of your games is not visible at the highest point of the season. I love the idea of a streaming service for the diaspora. I love the idea of a streaming service clubber for games that would not otherwise get attention. But these are the biggest games we have. These are the way we promote the match, the sport. These are the way we reward the volunteers. It is shameful. It is wrong. Donal O'Cusack spoke yesterday about the fact that RTE wanted to show Clare and Tip, were willing to show it, and that offer was refused. That revenue generation was placed above having eyes on what could be one of the great games of the year. That, to my mind, John, is a sporting scandal.
What do you think of that? Is it a scandal?
I don't know if I go that far. Like, I get why they're doing it, right? I don't agree with why they're doing it. I get why they're doing it. They're trying to drive revenue. They're trying to drive subscribers. They want to get people signed up to GA+. But I don't agree that they get to cherry pick the best games for the pay-per-view service. I don't agree with that. I feel there has to be some sort of better common ground. I know people are, you know, you hear John Milan suggesting games should be free to air and all the rest of it. I don't know what that looks like because I don't know how that's possible. It's not possible to show all the games.
It is to me in the future. Now, I don't know what for the future. It is very possible. TG Cahir have shown games for 30 years. They show over 200 games a year. How can TG Cahir not be a part of the senior championship picture on free-to-air terrestrial television in the Irish language, by the way? If you're watching Tipperary Clare tonight in the Irish language, it just struck me this week. And look, I've been going on about GA Go and I'm ranting about it, and people in the GA might, oh, here we go again, and rolling their eyes to heaven and going, well, okay, well, and sure, look, Sky Sports was around 10 years ago, but Sky Sports was more easily accessible as opposed to a television station.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking about my uncle who died 5 years ago at the age of 86. He lived 27 years on his own. He was a Limerick hurling fan. The idea of my uncle trying to set up a streaming service through a laptop in his home as a person who lived on his own he did live in Limerick City, so broadband could be perfect there. But there are other parts of the country where broadband is just not up to speed, in Kerry and Donegal, especially for next week. And TG Cahir showed the league final between Kerry and Donegal, but the match next week is a bigger game.
Yeah, you can't, John, forget your roots, and you can't forget the hold the GAA has on certain communities, on the life raft it is for a lot of people living alone and living in rural areas and isolated. The moment of those games, they feel a connection. Now, this can be made out to be a populist argument, and the counter argument is legitimate that those games weren't, a lot of games weren't being shown before. But as Orla says, the notion that you can hide the biggest ones, that you can pick and choose and discriminate. Now, the other side of that, the four Leinster football quarterfinals, if we're talking about extended coverage, where we had a wonderful story of Westmead beating Meath, where we had Wicklow pushing Dublin, none of those were available on GA Go. So to me, it falls between two stools, that it's taking the biggest matches, not providing some of the smaller matches. I have great friends in Croke Park, and I've had this argument with them. And when I said earlier, I don't understand it, I do understand the reasons for doing it, but I still don't understand it. Because give me the keys to the GA kingdom, and the first thing I do is make sure I can maximise the number of games on these potentially thrilling moments that are your recruiting agents for the next generation.
087-9180-180, do you agree, do you disagree with Roy and Orla and myself for saying about GA matches behind a paywall at certain times of the year, and as we've outlined certain of the positives of them? This is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. By the way, Celtic won, Hearts won. You're not missing a thing just because I haven't said it, folks. 57 minutes in at Parkhead, you're not missing a thing here. Hearts only need a draw. Celtic need to find another goal, and they need to win the game to win the title. This is on the edge. So look, It's an argument that, you know, the GA, well, there's nobody from the GA here to have their say, and I'm sure we're delighted to hear from them if they're in the studio. Then I'm sure plenty of, we tried to maybe articulate what they're thinking might be, but I just feel that it jarred at me watching that game. Sat down, almost, I wasn't even thinking about making an appointment to watch it, and then I just got sucked into it. Clare against Tipperary the other night, but last year I definitely was listening to Clare FM. Because I knew this was such a crucial game. I think the GA maybe are, because they've decided to go for the split season, and because the inter-county championship is so truncated now and it's so squeezed, it may be a difficult thing. And if you are setting up a streaming service, subscription service, it just feels like there's rules around, you got to show the provincial finals and the RTE deal, and you got to show the All-Ireland semi-finals, you got to show the All-Ireland final, but there has to be maybe a better thinking around. The hurling championship is the one that seems to always suffer around this, because to be honest, the most important game this weekend from my perspective is Clare Tipperary. The Leinster final would be lovely to Westmeath to win it, be lovely to see Monaghan or Armagh, because I haven't won either of them in a while, but it just feels to me, for the Jeopardy point of view, Clare and Tipperary, the last two All-Ireland winners, Tipperary could be feasibly out of the championship this weekend. That is a big deal. That should be on free tier.
Yeah, and you'd get eyeballs. You'll get people who aren't invested. You'll get people, because it's there, who will watch it because just it's on RTE. Everybody knows this. You'll get a greater audience for anything that's on RTE. People who will sit down and watch that game who will not go and seek it out on GA+. And I do get the whole idea of put it there, that'll drive the subscription, that'll pay for televising the lesser spotted games, the games that they won't, there won't be so many people because it costs however much to air them and to televise them and put out the outside broadcast units. But it does seem wrong that there has been a switch in perspective now, that they are now going actively deciding to put high tariff games behind the paywall, like Kerry Donegal, like Clare Tipperary. Like, that doesn't seem to me to be. And Roy made a point about the GAA. There is a degree to which they could become complacent because they're in every school and in every parish and in every club. And, it's so entwined in community that they assume that every kid will pick up a hurler or a football and just, go down that road. Other sports are actively trying to make inroads on getting kids involved, on getting kids signed up to play soccer, to be involved in athletics, to play rugby, to whatever it is. So they're going for those kids and they're trying to make it more attractive to children to go and play those sports. And how you do that is by making the sports visible and popular. And if you're not looking at those games, if you can't see a game on a Saturday through the summer, what are we doing?
I think, as you kind of touched upon, Roy, there, the GA is unique. There's a magic about it. There is the community aspect of it. They do so amazing things as a knitting agent for communities and people, and making people feel belong. You talk about the very start of this panel about people going to matches. So there is a balance between, I think, the revenue generation, which is important, but also just the promotion of the game and the promotion of hurling. You can have as many hurling task forces as you want, but there are people that would be casual viewers from maybe Clare, Tipperary, that would have walked in maybe at the start of extra time and would have been engrossed in it. And they're the people that, I suppose, the floating voters that you want to get on board to go, I might just send my kid to a cool camp. We're getting some texts in here on WhatsApp, 087-9180-180. I agree with Roy Kirsch's sporting scandal is right here, killing the ancient game of hurling. Plus, it's squeezed into a few weeks. What's wrong with Virgin Media? Gigi Carr, as JD said. Well, agree and disagree. Very frustrated. I could not watch a match last week with my 86-year-old dad. However, it's the way the world is going, unfortunately. We're going to get to more of this after 2 o'clock here on the Saturday panel. 087-9180-180 is the WhatsApp number. If you've got actually also the argument on the other side that you think actually, what, to be fair, the GA does need to generate revenue and it does own its own rights and it should be able to do what it wants with it. If you want to, get in touch with the contrarian view, please do. But at the moment, Celtic 1, Hearts 1 in Scotland. 61 minutes on the watch. Hearts 30 minutes plus away from their first title since 1960. Celtic have to score again to make it 56 crowns. And this is something that is going to be completely enthralling now for the next half hour. We're going to be watching it, obviously, as we speak about other topics on the panel as well. But this is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. We've got Orla McElroy here and Roy Kirsch on the panel to discuss things like Katie McCabe's departure from Arsenal, sporting controversy with the Southampton Spygate, and the whole matter of the fact that there's an FA Cup final in about an hour and 5 minutes. But plenty more to come here on the panel, and stay tuned after two.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to five. Part two of the Saturday panel reviewing the sporting week with the Irish Daily Mail sports editor Orla McElroy and the columnist with the Star newspaper Roy Kirsch. Celtic 1, Hearts 1. Hearts 20 minutes plus 70 minutes gone away from the title. Draw will be enough at Parkhead. Both goals in the first half. Celtic need to score to win it for the 56th time. Martin O'Neill calm on the sideline there. Hearts haven't won a Scottish title since 1960. We will not miss a thing here on the radio, folks. We'll be interrupting the chat whenever anything happens. We've been talking about GA matches that are not free to air on terrestrial television, for example, Clare Tipperary tonight. And look, there's an impassioned debate and sometimes it boils over and that's all good. And we're getting people 087-9180-180 to WhatsApp us about it. Regarding the Donegal-Kerry match behind a paywall, this is active price gouging at the expense of everyday supporter. This is the second match of the championship season for Donegal. Both the matches now behind a paywall. Incredibly unfair for Donegal supporters, especially when RTÉ apparently wanted to show it for free, says Mary. Well, I don't know the ins and outs of that, but here's another one. What I don't understand is that surely Jay could sell a TV package between Virgin Media and TG Cahir and they can make up the revenue that they get from Jay Plus. Another one, lads. I was down at under 10s football match in Letterkenny last Thursday evening. There was a driving freezing north wind rain lashing all the girls out of it. It was hard going for the girls to stuck it out. I was looking at the coaches, the parents, the wee players. I thought to myself, how wrong is it that we will not be able to watch the upcoming Donegal-Kerry game? It's mind-bending, the cognitive dissonance that is displayed by the upper echelons. This is Damien. An interesting point. Money going to Jay is superior to going to Sky Sports. Fact, says one of our texters. Another one, do we get back to less games, pre-17 formats, so everything can be shown? I'll be in favour in order to free up time for the club, etc. But the same people who are crying now would say we need more games. Well, there is a split season. Folks, why the focus on TV coverage? The most visual, visceral, passionate picture you get of a good GA game is from a good radio commentary. We really should promote local radio coverage more widely, says Jerry in Westmeath. Interesting.
I think that's a really, really good point. Yeah. Some of the local radio coverage for decades has been vital lifeblood. It's the veins of a community, the blood that serves a community, and so many of them do the job so well. And in that vivid word picture mentioned in that text, there is nothing. The best pictures you will ever see are on radio, I think, when you have really good broadcast.
By the way, the GA season pass for GA Plus is good value. It's €95. So that needs to be pointed out as well. I think this is more of a principle. This is a principle debate.
Yeah.
This is about promoting the games to as many people as possible, the top matches. And I know that I think the championship structure has put pressure on the balance and opportunity cost of having to pick between the top matches. Like, it doesn't cost much to watch J+. And to be fair, that is something that needs to be pointed out. But Clare Tipperary tonight should be on the television. As simple as that. It should be on terrestrial television some way around the country. Clare and Tipperary, one of the biggest matches of the year. Tipperary could be out of the hurling championship this weekend. And TG Cahir, to me, in my view, without any knowledge of it, are the elephant in the room. So we're going to move on to football. We got the FA Cup in, 55 minutes? I'm just looking, is there a man's gone from the FA Cup, Orla and Roy, because of a few things here. We have the fact that you have the Premier League is bigger, the Champions League is bigger. And then I look back at the last 30 finals, 26 of them have been won by the Big Five. The Big Five being the two Manchester clubs, Liverpool, Arsenal and Chelsea.
If I, as a 15-year-old, was talking to the 57-year-old me now and saying, what are you looking forward to the FA Cup final today? And I said, I'm 99% certain I won't watch it. The 15-year-old me would have taken out a contract on me and had me shot. Because when you were a kid, you walked, the FA Cup final, we were talking about it all day. It was the Willy Wonka golden ticket. A certain generation might not realise there was no Sky Sports, there was no sport on TV, or very little. The only domestic English game, club game, that was shown live on television in the entire year was the FA Cup final. And both BBC and ITV showed it, and their programming started at about 5 in the morning, it felt like. They ran a sort of a 7 or 8 hour programme. You had mad stuff like FA Cup, It's a Knockout. You had pictures of the teams leaving the hotel and getting on the buses, and you ate this up. I was, the nights before those cup finals, like a kid on Christmas Eve. I was a kid on a May Christmas Eve. I'd get up really early. I'd badger money out my mother and father so I could get the papers and read about the stuff. And then I would sit down transfixed. And I think people of our generation have our memories. First one I remember properly is the 75 cup final, Alan Taylor, Bobby Stokes in 76. But the Brady cup final in 79, I did a piece with Shane Curran, the former Roscommon keeper, last week, and he was saying that's what got him into Arsenal, that six Irish players playing for the Arsenal team that day, Liam Brady giving a absolute signature performance of his career just before he moved on to Italy. Then I know you're, John, a big Spurs fan, the Ricky Villa goal. These were, Orla, they were the landmark moments of the sporting year almost.
Oh yeah, completely. And I know, look, I know we sound a bit like we're harking back to the good old days.
You are.
But like, yeah, well.
But they were good old days.
They were good old days. And it was, like, that's what I was laughing at.
Why change then? What's changed?
It's just like, because we see so much football now, it's not a novelty anymore. Like, nobody cares about watching the team arrive on the bus and get off the bus and what suits are they wearing and all that kind of stuff that, you know, we worried about before. But also this, like, even take today's pairing.
Sadly, good chance there. Just missed it. 1-1 still against Hearts. They got a free kick outside the box. Go on.
Like today's pairing is not particularly awe-inspiring.
Crystal Palace is more romantic last year, and I think you do need the Wiggins.
You do want a story like that. Yeah. That's going to be more enjoyable. But like Chelsea v Man City, it's just not.
That's what I'm saying. The 26 of the last 30 between the big five, and you think, oh, it's the big clubs are so big now that it's removed your Bobby Stokes, which was a second division club, or Sunderland 73, or Coventry even winning in 87. Well, no, they were first division club, but.
Feel more like franchises than clubs.
They do.
You've got so many, you know, nation states owning clubs and things like, you know, the money that's gone into them. It doesn't feel like the community or the club that it once was.
It's also not the priority for those clubs. The Premier League and the Champions League are the two tournaments that they prioritise, the two tournaments that people are engaged in. I actually sort of, if I'm sitting at home in a weekend in January and I'm doing nothing and I'm saying a couple of games this week and I find out it's FA Cup weekend and I go, oh, the romance of the cup, I couldn't give a bloody damn. And unfortunately, it's funny with Celtic on, the first overseas match I went to was the 1988 Scottish Cup final. Celtic played Dundee United. Mick McCarthy was playing. Frank McAvennie got a couple of goals. But that was the day that Wimbledon beat Liverpool. And that news went around Hampden Park. It was the old bowl Hampden Park, an awful dump, magnificent. And the news went around and everybody started singing. There was a crazy gang chant went up from both the Celtic and Dundee United fans. There was a recognition of the enormity of that moment, whereas now there is no enormity.
Celtic won, Hearts won. Celtic had a free kick there, which has gone wide. Hearts, 13 plus minutes away from the title, was watching that game as a kid because Wimbledon Liverpool was such a shock. Aldridge missing the penalty and Larry Sanchez scoring the winner. And remember a Liverpool supporting neighbour who went absolutely berserk afterwards, giving out about Vinnie Jones and Vinnie Jones' behaviour on the pitch and foaming at the mouth that Vinnie Jones, you know, should be on the pitch. But you remember it vividly because you just, what you do is you pick out your football and you go out and you play football afterwards.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you do. So you talk about roots there and something being lost. I'll tell you, a person who hasn't lost his roots and represents the best of us is Seamus Coleman. I mean, he's now leaving Everton as a player in the next couple of weeks, whether he'll decide to play on elsewhere, if he wants to continue to play for the national team. I mean, you talk about the GA being the best of us in some ways. Seamus Coleman seems to represent the best of us.
Absolutely. And like, I watched in full his video message where he, you know, talked about who he wanted to thank and all the rest of it. Such a humble man. And you could tell from listening to that video message, the leader that he is and why he has so many people who, you know, would follow him and would hold him up on the pedestal, which they do. And he's so highly respected because of the person he is. And it's very true to him that he is, you know, nobody thought he would leave Everton. He probably never wanted to. But the fact that he's going because he wants to continue to play for Ireland, and how is he going to do that? Like, I had to laugh at the, you know, it was Moyes who said we offered him every job from Gardner to assistant coach to get him to stay. And of course they'd want him to stay. He's Everton through and through. But yeah, just an amazing character.
Oh, Celtic nearly score, but just tipped over here. Nigren and Hearts surviving, but Celtic turning the screw 1-1 in Scotland. This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk, the Saturday panel. Orla McElroy, continue.
How do you continue after that,
John? Celtic another chance, just wide. 1-1.
I'm sure this makes great radio, us watching a match.
Well, hopefully that's up to the listeners to decide. But hopefully they are enjoying.
Well, it's an enjoyable one anyway. Like, this is fairly breathless stuff, isn't it?
It is. Hearts hanging on. But they're still title winners as we speak. 80 minutes now elapsed at Parkhead. They just hit the post, Celtic. They just hit the post.
John, you know, it's really, really funny while we're talking about the game. And as I said, the first trip I went to was to see Celtic. I went over to see a lot of Celtic games, a lot of Celtic fan friends, but I have a huge number of friends who would be sort of passive Celtic fans who want to see Hearts win today. Not out of any negative feeling towards Celtic, just 1960 and the sense of the first people to break the old firm dominance since Ferguson and just the opportunity that might represent. I think there's a lot of people who quietly, they may not say it too much out loud, would be not unhappy for Hearts to win.
No, absolutely not. But, you know, you can understand Celtic fans as well. Like, there's been a lot gone on this season that they're very, very deeply unhappy with, like, and the way the club has been handled. So you can understand why they might kind of, you know, not feel too bad about
them. All turned up, though, today.
I mean, and it's a huge story. I mean, O'Neill has come back as a sort of messiah-like figure. He's second only to Jock Stein amongst Celtic managers in terms of the affection in which with which he's held. And you have... The fans are so angry at the board and there's such a split. And yet O'Neill has arrived and he sort of stitched it together. It's a very moderate Celtic team. They've had a terrible season. They had, I mean, the way the Brendan Rodgers situation was handed, they get an interim manager in who's a disaster. Martin comes back once.
Oh, another chance. Over, still 1-1. Sorry.
Comes back twice. And now we have this drama. Obviously, the way... They won their game the other night when Hearts top, basically they were there until the 98th or 99th minute. This is going to be 10 minutes of wonderful drama.
Celtic are flying at the moment. They've got a good rhythm. They're getting the ball into the box quite a lot now. They've had definitely more than half chances. 1-1 Celtic Hearts, 82 minutes on the watch. Do you want to say anything about Seamus Coleman, Roy?
Yeah, I think there are certain people in life that you just say you have nothing but admiration for them. People who are defined by their selflessness, defined by their professionalism, defined by their priorities not being about personal achievement, about wanting to make a team better, about wanting to make a dressing room a harmonious place. Seamus Coleman is a cousin of Desi Farrell, the former Dublin manager, All-Ireland winner as a player and manager. And a number of the Nafina guys met up with Seamus Coleman's people. I don't know whether it was social occasion or whether it was around the match, and they just said they met all these Coleman people and they could see where Seamus came from. They were just proper human beings. The words I think that were used were sound men. If I was to go into battle, I can't think of somebody I would want to go in more behind or I'd be prouder to march behind than Seamus Coleman, one of the great Irish sportsmen and one of the great Irish people in the way he carries himself.
Now, Katie McCabe as well is to leave Arsenal after she's won everything.
Everything.
And I think when I think about Katie McCabe, I just think that she is the trailblazer. She is the public face of Irish women's football. She has brought the sport to a new realm of awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. And she'll say that she was inspired by Emma Byrne before, yes, you know, at Arsenal. And
maybe it's the World Cup that makes me think that.
Oh, completely. But like she just, it's her passion. Like, talk about wearing your heart on your sleeve. And it's an awful, awful pity that I don't know how Arsenal couldn't get it together to give her 24 hours earlier and give her an opportunity to say goodbye properly at the Emirates Stadium. Like, announcing it the following day.
Maybe was there finishing a feeling that they might have been swaying to keep her on, possibly?
I don't know. Come up with an earlier deadline, like. Yeah. Put a deadline on your deal. Yeah. There's no way. They had Beth Mead doing her farewell and, you know, you could see Katie was visibly emotional and there were tears and you could see what was going on. It just hadn't been said. So it's an awful pity that I know she gets to leave the team out today, but even I saw a video yesterday with Renee Slagers talking to the team, saying how she was going to make Katie captain today. And even she said, it's a pity we couldn't do this at the Emirates. You know, it's terrible for somebody who is, as you say, given so much to that club, won everything from League Cup, FA Cup, you know, Super League, Champions League. She's won everything, like, and she has given everything to that club. She's just such a committed player and she's Arsenal through and through, and it's an awful, awful pity that she didn't get to say goodbye there and then.
They're 3-0 up away to Liverpool at the moment, 58 minutes into the match in the Women's Super League. The other scores, Brighton 1, Spurs 0, Chelsea 1, Manchester United 0, London City Lionesses 0, Villa 1, West Ham 0, Manchester City 1. The other game is goalless Everton and Leicester. Still 1-1 Celtic Hearts, 85 minutes now in the watch at Parkhead. Hearts hanging on, Celtic looking to find a way. Hearts will be champions, first time in 66 years, if it stays this way. Yeah, Katie McCabe, what a servant.
When you talk about legacy, John, you know, we've the Katies, Katie Taylor and Katie McCabe. Their legacy, I don't think, will be anything they won. I think their legacy will be how they changed young girls' perception of what was possible as an athlete.
Yes.
And I don't think that there could be a greater service given to women's sport in Ireland on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, hopefully we'll see another example of that tomorrow now at the Aviva when there's going to be a great
over 30,000 tickets sold.
Yeah.
Ireland, Scotland.
I was listening to Anna Capeless was in last night.
With
chat
Megan,
Yeah. And, you know, a great chat. Anna is like the one woman hype machine for this match. She's just fantastic. Brilliant. She's been getting everybody revved up for it. She even rewrote Joxer Goes to Stuttgart. And she is that. You should look it up on her Instagram video. It's fantastic. She rewrote it, sang it, played the ukulele with it herself. This woman, like, her talents are endless, but it should be a fantastic occasion tomorrow, you know, and it's great to see it. And one thing that I was thinking of over the last couple of days is people like Ciara Griffin, Nicola Friday. Think about Nicola Friday when she fronted up in so many interviews after they were getting beaten, going winless through the Six Nations for, you know, not so long ago, it's only a few years back. And she fronted up and stood there and talked about it when they weren't getting the backing which they deserve and which they belatedly are getting now. And you just see what...
Oh, Celtic have scored! They've scored! No. No, it's disallowed.
Oh, Lord.
The flag is up. Celtic 1, Hearts 1. 86 minutes, 45 seconds on the watch. And Hearts are holding on to the title.
Is there a VAR check, I wonder?
Oh, my God. This is just the Celtic fans. They've all got their heads in their hands.
They're chewing their scarves. It's
nice offside.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Celtic won, Hearts won. Celtic get the ball in the net. But this has been ruled out. So we'll wait and see what happens here. Yeah. Sometimes you just need to say nothing, even in the live radio in studio.
There's some great pictures of the spectators, which I always think is as interesting as the game in moments like this.
Maeda thought he scored, hadn't. 1-1, Celtic Hearts. How much stoppage time will they play? Hearts fans there, the very few of them who've got tickets, heads in their hands.
Doesn't look like there's been too many stoppages.
No, but...
John, I remember being behind the goal in Stuttgart, Euro 88, and honestly, every minute... took 25 minutes. And it's the most... At that stage, I was 19 years of age and I actually thought at one stage I was going to have a heart attack. I got this pain across my chest. I had headaches. And I would love to have seen a camera goal. Just on that terrace.
They've given the goal! They've given the goal! Celtic 2, Hearts 1! Unbelievable!
Obviously took a deflection, the pass on the way through.
88 minutes on the watch. Celtic are going mad at Parkhead. Maeda with the goal. Celtic 2, Hearts 1. Hearts fans in absolute devastation.
Oh my God.
Wow.
There's going to be ructions on the touchline now. They can't believe this.
Hearts fans and their players look absolutely dejected. And Maeda is in tears.
How?
Onside. How? VAR decides for the second time in a week in favour of Celtic. Onside. Celtic 2, Hearts 1. Hearts have to find a goal now in the next minute plus stoppage time. Otherwise, Celtic will win the title in Scotland for the 56th time. Say something.
Everything.
This is just...
VAR now rules the world. I don't know, but the picture we're looking at, he clearly looks... offside.
Yep. We saw it the first time it looked offside.
Yeah, so there's clearly some extenuating circumstance. But we've now had the English title last week decided by a VAR decision.
Well, nearly, yeah.
Well, pretty much, I think. And potentially now this as well. So it's a fairy tale story for Martin O'Neill and Celtic. It's absolute heartbreak for Hearts. And you imagine... the VAR fallout is going to be enormous one more time.
But how long did it take from the time that hit the back of the net for the time for them to decide that it was a goal? Like, this is what I don't love about VAR. I know people will say you get the right decisions and all the rest of it, but you can't celebrate a goal. You don't know is it going to be checked. You don't know how long it takes to get it awarded. This is what takes the heart out of the game for me.
Well, it's a different game. It's not the football we knew.
Yeah, no. I think VAR has essentially stolen football's soul because... all those spontaneous eruptions of joy and euphoria are now qualified because you have to wait to see if your joy is justified.
But it was the right decision. And that's, I mean, for such an important moment, the title either going to Hearts or Celtic, the VAR has now made the right decision. And is that not the right course of action?
P-
Potentially yes and potentially no. I think you can argue both cases, John. I think sport, on the definitive ones, whether a ball is over the line or not.
8 minutes. Eight minutes of stoppage time.
But on subjective calls, not so much.
Celtic 2, Hearts 1.
Take the Arsenal-West Ham situation last week. Yes, it was a foul on the Arsenal goalkeeper. But there were also five or six other fouls simultaneously happening which could be called. So it becomes the micromanaging of every situation, and I just think it sucks the joy out of it. Now, we had moments like the Thierry Henry handball. That wouldn't have happened under VAR. You see, even in today's sport, say the Michael Murphy incident in the league final with VAR, that would have probably been a red card. So yes, as a priority, you probably want to get things right, but that doesn't mean you can't feel a little bit disillusioned at the way it has sucked the spontaneous joy out of so much of it. Not that Celtic fans, I hasten to add, will feel that way today.
No, I mean, in general, I agree with you, and I've been having this argument with Shane Coleman, for example, on the hard shoulder. I think VAR has made the viewing experience of football inferior.
It's diminished.
It is no longer, the Aguero moment can't happen now. We literally have had an Aguero moment from a decision. So people are waiting for a decision. This is not rugby, by the way, where they have their reviews and everything. But the Scottish title now is going to be decided on a decision. That's what it's come down to. 92 minutes into 98 here at Parkhead. Celtic 2, Hearts 1. Maeda with the goal. 87 minutes. It was 1-1 at half time. Celtic needed to win. They are winning at the moment. Hearts need to find a goal from somewhere to win the title for the first time in 66 years. And if they don't, wow, there's going to be lots of ructions. And obviously it's got very serious with the surveillance that was put on that referee, John Beaton, the other night after. That's how dark this thing can get now.
Yeah, it's
that's
awful.
That's just how social media has got so toxic.
But you talk about rugby and talk about like how the TMO intervention,
yes,
you know, slows the whole thing down. That's one thing that I found this season. I've actually been at a couple of AIL games down at Naas. And the joy of not having TMOs deciding. And the game being far more end-to-end and enjoyable a spectacle as a result. That the referee makes a decision and that's it. It's there and it's done. And you have nobody going over and appealing and looking for it to be changed. Sir, can we check this? Can we look at this? You know, he was doing this to me. And like, it's a much more enjoyable experience to go to a match where you're not waiting on the TMO interventions or is the ref going to send this to the TMO? Or like, how many times lately have we seen somebody, a try haven't been converted and they're about to kick off and then, hold on, no, come bring back. That one's going to be chalked off.
It's getting a bit heated now on the touchline, pushing and dragging here. Celtic know that they're, what, 4 minutes away, 4.5 minutes away from winning the title.
Yellow cards all over the place.
Hearts had it in the palm of their hand, but Maeda's goal at 87 minutes. If you're just joining us, folks, and off the ball Saturday here, and you talk dramatic stuff. We thought we were coming in here for a Saturday paddle, bit of ranting about the GA, bit of chat about PGA golf. And what have we got? We've got Celtic and Hearts now.
It is amazing how these things just kidnap your senses, though. And that is, I hadn't watched much of the snooker and start watching the world final.
Oh, poor Mark Allen, first of all.
Yeah, the Mark Allen moment. Oh, my God. I mean, even VAR couldn't save that. But I know, but we can get drawn into moments. And I would suspect this is the most watched match in the Scottish Premier League for...
Ever?
I don't know.
Ever, perhaps.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
The time of
the
day,
timing
early
is
Saturday.
Perfect. Yeah. And some drama.
The Hearts fans are just gutted at the moment. They're just praying for a miracle. The Celtic fans have got goosebumps because they know they're on the verge of winning the title here.
The Martin O'Neill statue is being commissioned as we speak. There are mixed verdicts on his reign with Ireland, but he is absolutely revered.
He's a man for the big occasion, Martin O'Neill. That's why I would say back to 2000 when they were hammering Rangers and they're bringing him to the Europa League final and everything. And he did bring us to a Euros and he did give us that moment against Germany. He's a big moments manager and everywhere he's gone, whether Leicester or Republic of Ireland or Celtic, he has delivered big moments.
It's that thing, he's kind of a bit of a throwback as well, isn't he? He's like the motivation man rather than the
dad.
Obviously,
driven. He's got Sean Maloney in there and other coaches doing their jobs.
And he's doing the top few inches.
I would be a fan of a lot of O'Neill's railing against the modern micromanaging about the obsession with data.
XG.
He hates XG almost as much as I do. And I still think there's a place for the culture of man management, for someone who can actually make players feel taller.
Rod Stewart in the crowd, giving it loads.
Getting younger looking.
Chatting to Prince Charles last week. Today he's at Parkhead.
But there's...
King Charles, sorry, go on.
O'Neill has that capacity to lift people. There's Frank Roach has a lovely piece looking back at Paddy O'Shea's win with Westmeath in the Independent today. And Paddy told Tomás O'Flaherty, you get them fit from below the neck. I'll do the stuff above the neck. And the Westmeath players talk about how he transformed their psychology. And I think that's when you call O'Neill a big name or big game manager, I think that's why.
It's motivation, isn't it? And
yeah.
There's still, I mean, it shows that there's still a place in sport for it. 96 minutes, 12 seconds out of 8 minutes of stoppage time here at Parkhead. Celtic 2, Hearts 1. It looks, to be honest, Hearts just need that one chance, but they haven't been able to get the ball. And that's the negative for them. And
when we talk about old school, John, while the last minute's taking place, I just have to talk about Padraig Harrington. Padraig Harrington's 54 years of age. He was born the same month as Roy Keane, August 1971. To make the cut as he did last night, to playing the back nine in two under par, he's a shot ahead of Shane Lowry. He's just a shot or two behind Rory. We were talking about Seamus Coleman and great Irish sportsman a while ago and praising his longevity. It's 2008, 18 years since Harrington won both the Open and the PGA, and his competitive lust, his capacity to want to be better, his obsession with golf, his zaniness, his willingness to look stupid to improve himself. He's one of my all-time heroes, and I just thought I'd call him out while we're watching
Hearts
this.
Hearts have got unfold. A free kick here. The keeper's gone up for it. Cleared at the moment. Hearts now got a chance for a shot here. Have Celtic got a chance to make it 3-1 here? The keeper is back in his own half. And Celtic could finish this now and make it sure. 3-1. The ball is rolled into the back of the net. Martin O'Neill is on the touchline celebrating. No question about it now. Scotland has a champion for the 56th time. And the fans invading the pitch. Celtic 3, Hearts 1. And 97 minutes, 42 seconds on the watch here at Parkhead. Celtic are going to be champions for the fifth year in a row. The Hearts fans absolutely devastated. 3-1 does not reflect what we've just seen, because it was 1-1 until the 87th minute, but Celtic have got a runaway goal there and they're about to win the Scottish title.
It's a bit of a, they think it's all over moment, isn't it?
Wasn't
look
it?
At the, yeah. The whole pitch is covered in fans.
Before the game is even over, the fans have invaded the pitch.
Martin O'Neill looking for somebody to hug on the touchline.
Hopefully now it'll be all well behaved.
Yeah.
If you are a Celtic fan though, talk about dreamland the last few days. I mean, you've resigned yourself to catastrophe on Wednesday against Motherwell. You get that 98-minute penalty. Kelechi Iheanacho kept his cool magnificently to slot it away. There was a pitch invasion then, just a spontaneous eruption of joy. And here we have it again. When you think you've lost something, when you've resigned yourself, suddenly you put your hand in your pocket and you pull out a winning lottery ticket. It's even if you have dominated, what is that, 13 and 14 seasons, the degree of domination in moments like that goes out the window and you can just enjoy what is a magical moment.
Callum Osmond, top of the charts in many decades, and Celtic 3, Hearts 1, and they're going to try and restart this game here. We know what the outcome is going to be.
It's chaos. Oh, they are.
Yeah, Stewart from the pitch. Some of the fans are trying to go back to their seats, but it could be a while before they play with the last 20 seconds of it. Celtic players and Hearts players have gone in. So have they blown it up? It looks like they might have. Wow.
Fitting end to
a chaotic end to
season.
The season of VAR is confirmed as sort of as such.
Is it an unsatisfactory end to what we've seen today?
It depends who you're supporting, I suppose. I don't think there would be any Celtic fan who would think it was unsatisfactory. I'd say Parkhead is like Mount Etna erupting at the moment. On the flip side, if you're a Hearts supporter and you've waited since 1960, 90% of their supporters at the game today, I'm sure, weren't alive when they won in 1960. You've led all season. You have won your game on Wednesday and are hearing that Celtic have failed to win and you think you're there. You recover from that haymaker to go ahead today. Celtic immediately equalise. You hold out. You're under siege in the second half. You've held out a minute to go, 2 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go. You're there and you're gone. And it'll be very hard for them. the flip side is it'll be a wonderful evening to be a Celtic supporter.
Well done for Liam Scales as well.
Mm.
To be part of that today, be part of the build-up, to be part of the atmosphere, to be part of the defence and to be an ever-present under O'Neill. And he's got that new deal as well. So he's done very well, Liam Scales.
There was, remember when Scotland qualified for the World Cup? And there was, I remember reading somewhere about the seismic activity was detected miles away. You can imagine what it's going to be like today in Glasgow.
It's not clear that the game is over to me. It might be, it might not be.
It's hard to tell, isn't it?
Just feel for those Hearts supporters there, the corner of the ground. Celtic 3, Hearts 1, that's going to be the score, folks, because they had about 20 seconds to play. Celtic are champions for the 56th time. You're speaking about Orla McElroy and Roy Curtis here, by the way, if you're just tuning in. Celtic Scottish champions. This is the Saturday panel, Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. The PGA Championship, you've enjoyed it, Orla? Have you enjoyed the pain? Or have you not? I'm just looking at the leaderboard here. We have Maverick McNealy and Alex Molly on 4 under par. But what? Talking 30 players within 5 shots, 43.
It's very bunched. Yeah,
Rory McIlroy's 5 shots off the lead on 1 over. Shane Lowry and Padraig Harrington just made the cut.
And wasn't it Rory who said that sort of a bunch leaderboard is not a great sign because of the pin positions and they've been struggling? What was annoying me last night was the duration of how long the play was taking and how slow it was. That was what I was struggling with. But I don't, as we were saying earlier, I don't mind seeing the pros struggle. A little bit of, a couple of easier pins would be nice. I do understand why they're saying that it's too tough.
Full-time has confirmed Celtic have won the 2025-2026 Scottish Premiership title. Got the Scottish Cup final to come. They were 1-1 with Hearts with 87 minutes in the watch. Maeda scored. It was originally ruled out for offside, but then VAR ruled it onside. Dramatic twist in the tail, and then they scored a runaway goal at the end. 14 titles in 15 years for Celtic. One more now than Rangers. And for Hearts, it's absolute devastation.
I think Aronimink has been the real winner this week. I think there's a real sense of entitlement about professional golfers who play for obscene amounts of money and who want the easy life, who want to play pitch and putt courses every week. If the course is so difficult, how come 54-year-old Padraig Harrington was able to go around under par yesterday? What I love seeing is the greatest players tested, because then it's not just a test of physical ability, it becomes a real test of mental ability. Rory talked about not requiring a strategy off the tee before the tournament, and then was tied 139th for driving accuracy in round one and tailed the field. And I wondered watching it, my God, it was a miracle that he won at Augusta driving as poorly, and it showed how superb his short game was. He got it together yesterday. He had the third best round yesterday, while unfortunately Shane Lowry, and it's becoming a recurring trend, I love Shane Lowry, I'm a big fan, he just keeps throwing in these poor rounds. He got himself in a brilliant position in his first round. He was 6 over in his round yesterday, the worst round by anybody who made the cut. There was a shank at 17, there was 34 putts. And when Shane won in Portrush, it's one of the great moments in Irish sporting history. I got one of the great buzzes of my life. I thought he's able for anything now. He's faced the biggest pressure he can possibly face in his career. That's 1,300, or sorry, that's almost, what is it, 2018? That's 8 years ago.
But
it's 19 rather, sorry. But it's 1,343 days since he last won, 192 weeks, and he's 39 now. I really thought after the first round he'd put himself in position. But Rory's right there. He's 3 behind Scheffler, which I think is the real leader, maybe. Scheffler and Åberg. And I hope it remains as, because I have suffered so much on a golf course simply because of a lack of ability, I have no problem at all with seeing golfers tested and having to play difficult shots.
It's a strange one with Larry, because there's no issue of him stepping up at the really big moments when he was able to do it at Portrush and he was able to do it at the Ryder Cup at Bethpage, one of the most important moments of his life as a sports person. But in the last 5 majors, tied 42nd, cut, tied 40th, tied 30th. So the majors have not been kind to him recently.
It's becoming like a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy now, though. And that's the worry, is that, you know, you saw him at, wasn't it the Cognizant when things went so badly wrong towards the end? Like, that's now going to get into his head. And in the same way that Rory, you know, eventually like admitted that it, of course it was in his head every time he went back to Augusta for the Masters and, you know, that Grand Slam was in his head. Like, that's going to be there for Shane to worry about now. But like, one thing I have enjoyed about this week, and it is good this year, is you have a couple of players who could complete the Grand Slam this year. Do you know, you've got more players that could do it.
Jordan Spieth
at the USPGA, and then Scotty,
yeah,
US Open. I've enjoyed watching Brooks Koepka and John Rahm this week. John Rahm is really, really doing his absolute utmost to keep a lid on it. And you can see that, like, it's, you know, it's threatening to come out.
Buyer's remorse. They should never gone to live.
Oh, completely. Yeah. But, you know, the same thing with Koepka. Koepka clearly went because he thought his knee was shot and his career was done. And this was like cashing in an insurance policy going to live. And now is swallowing, you know, the sort of punishment and coming back and sitting there as the alternate to get into tournaments because he wants to play. And he's realised that he can compete and he's working hard to do it. But like John Rahm, just the ego is what got in the way of him there.
Yeah.
Like this belief that he was too big.
The dollar signs. You just joined us, folks, here on Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. We're on the panel here with Orla McElroy and Roy Curtis, journalists, and we're watching Celtic celebrate a 56th Scottish title, 3-1 against Hearts. They had to win today. They've done the job. Took them to the 87th minute to go in front. They added a third goal in stoppage time, and Hearts are devastated. Celtic are Scottish champions. Martin O'Neill is the man. What about tomorrow then, Roy? The Dubs and Westmeath? Are Dublin contenders for the All-Ireland, or are they not in the running?
Before I went to Portlaoise 2 weeks ago, Dublin playing Louth, the defending champions in Leinster, and I had strong suspicion that Louth would win the game. Dublin came out, gave an outstanding performance, blew Louth away. I thought Louth were overly conservative, but Niall Scully was like a quarterback controlling the game. Cormac Costello was exceptional. That was a Dublin team that just a couple of weeks earlier were on the rack against Wicklow and Aucrim and what might have been the shock to beat all shocks. I still, obviously they're in the conversation because there's still a core group of quality players there. But Conor Callaghan is missing again tomorrow. Real doomsday stuff I'm hearing about the state of his hamstring. Owen Merchant is another not there. I'd still have them 5th, 6th, 7th on the grid. And I also think Westmeath have a real chance with the way they're playing. They're playing free and easy under Mark McHugh. Sensational win against Kildare. The way they are, sensational character against Kildare. Great win against Meath. If I had to put a bet to save my life, I would say a Dublin win. But I think Westmeath could win, just as I think Monaghan have a chance, even though I think Armagh are really complete, extraordinary, that Kieran McGeaney and Armagh haven't won an Ulster title since 2008. McGeaney won 6 as a player, but part of the romance of this season, and what odds would you have got at the start of the season on Roscommon, Westmeath and Monaghan contesting provincial finals?
On that note, Roy Curtis, star columnist, and Orla McElroy, Irish Daily Mail sports editor, thank you so much for having such a fun hour with us in the panel.
Pleasure, JD.
And we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you, John.
Cheers.
Don't forget, we've got football Saturday between 3 and 5 to reflect on this Celtic drama. 3-1 win of our Hearts, VAR intervening again. And Celtic are the champions. We'll have Owen Doyle and Chris Forrester between 3 and 5. You want to WhatsApp us. Celtic fans, just WhatsApp us. How much do you love VAR? 087-9180-180, the text number, 087-9180-180. You're raising a glass of whatever to VAR this evening. We're back after this.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.